black and white.
Frente a una crisis general económica, social.
Faced with a general economic, social, and criminal crisis, is Ecuador on its way to overcome them or simply failing in the attempt, and even ending as a failed state?
O simplemente a fracasar en el intento e incluso quedar como un estado fallido. Hoy día, el gobierno de Daniel Noboa.
Today, Daniel Noboa's government has undertaken a war against crime.
A la cual acusa de ser terrorista.
He calls criminals of terrorism and cleverly tries to assimilate or present it as the same as the resistance of social movements.
La resistencia de los movimientos sociales. En Ecuador hoy día.
In Ecuador today, a country of almost 18 million inhabitants, we have 5 million inhabitants who live with only $3 a day, and almost 3 million who live on $1.50 a day. And 66% of jobs are informal.
6% de los empleos son informales.
That is the reality of Ecuador.
Noboa, en medio de esta guerra a la delincuencia.
In the midst of this war on crime, Noboa has unleashed a number of privatization actions, for example, in electricity, raising the prices for the population.
Y subir incluso las tarifas de la misma la población. Noboa, en esta guerra contra la delincuencia, ha condonado la deuda.
Noboa, in this war against crime, has forgiven the debt of large economic groups, and yet he has raised or proposed the raising VAT by 3 points at this moment. That will rise to 15%, which is a lot in a country with a dollarized policy.
La guerra a la delincuencia ha traído.
The war on crime has brought his friends from the leadership of the Southern Command, headed by Laura Richardson, to organize the country. The North Americans are there, because today they enter Ecuador without any inspection of their documents, or what they bring. In any case, when they leave, they're not inspected either. That's the agreement they reached. The police and soldiers who arrive in Ecuador, according to what they have agreed, will not have to give any account to the Ecuadorian authorities, even if they commit the most cruel crimes.
Aunque cometan delitos de los más crueles, ninguno.
And they can walk freely in the country. That's the reality.
Esa es la realidad.
The weapons of Russian origin that were in Ecuador. What do you think about that?
¿Qué creen? Se lo pasó Noboa.
Noboa passed them under the Pentagon. That happened also to those of Chinese origin. All are to be sent to Ukraine. A Ukrainian plane belonging to Zelensky landed a few days ago in Quito.
Un avión ucraniano de Zelensky aterrizó hace pocos días en Quito. De cualquier manera.
In any case, sovereignty, independence, and social rights today have blatantly receded in Ecuador.
En forma descarada en Ecuador.
Ecuador is stopping to be a country and is becoming a factory. The problem for us, the Latin Americans, is that the United States is planning for the rest of our continent. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Eduardo Artes. Bien, hoy estamos con.
Well, today we're with Irene Leon from Ecuador. Ecuadorian sociologist, political analyst, and member of the World Social Forum, WFS, since its inception in 2021.
2021. Así como también del foro de las, el foro social.
Also a member of the Social Forum of the Americas and the Network of Intellectuals, Artists and Social Movements in Defense of Humanity. Welcome to Black and White.
Bienvenida a Negro y Blanco.
Hello, I'm very happy to be with you in this program, and at this time, I'm at your service.
Irene, ¿qué pasa en Ecuador?
Irene, what is going on in Ecuador? What is the story of criminals and drug traffickers? Is there a power struggle in Ecuador? They attacked a television channel. The same thing is said about the social groups. In many cases, social organizations are accused of terrorism. The topic of conversation is not drug traffickers, but terrorists. What is the foundation of these issues? What is really going on in Ecuador?
Well, I think the key to this is the condition that Ecuador is in. Since more than 6 years ago, there was a promise of change in Ecuador, change and transformation of the country with a governance and project definition for the country and based on different dimensions of such issues. Ecuador wanted to implement socialism and good life, which has the support of the Constitution. Our Constitution is considered one of the most advanced constitutions in the world. Ecuador was once the second country in Latin America and the Caribbean, but since 6 years ago, the country has plunged into what I call a neoliberal coup. In other words, an attempt to restore neoliberalism to the country at any cost. Since then, our country has been grappling with legal war, political persecution, and judicial and media imposition based on some scenarios. In the end, all this case creates an environment in which politics, definition of the country, and country management within the framework of the provisions of the Constitution remain only in words and on paper. Therefore, in the same period of time, with the opening of the market and the governance of the country, various centers of illegal capital have been established in the country to provide the basis for neoliberal actions. The main focus is close to financial capital because Ecuador is a dollarized country. Ecuador lost its national currency more than 20 years ago, and the US dollar prevailed through Ecuador. Therefore, these conditions have prepared the ground for various money laundering operations and unauthorized transactions. In these transactions, financial capital is transferred. Therefore, this financial flow is related to illegal businesses and is known as financial capital bank. It's very important that a turnaround has taken place in Ecuador and is taking place. In addition to illegal capital, there is the export sector, which is also very important, as well as the international trade sector, where there is also a possibility that illegal capital circulates in these sectors. Also, there are sections related to human trafficking and other trafficking, including drug trafficking. Therefore, I say all these issues to explain that this problem that exists is caused by the structural orientations of the country and the region. In this problem, the proceeds of these businesses, which are considered illegitimate, go into neoliberal and free market activities where different actors and sectors interact with each other, as I mentioned. As a part of these activities and shrinking the government, which is a part of neoliberalism, in Ecuador we see the transfer of power to powerful institutions, factual powers, that I mentioned. So all the trends that we're talking about, including attacks, drug trafficking, and a certain kind of violence that is seen, are caused by the opening of the market doors in Ecuador, the de-governance in the country, and the return of neoliberalism against the good life constitution in Ecuador. The constitution, contrary to this trend, defines Ecuador as a country with a multi-sector and diverse economy, whose production is also multi-sector and diverse. Ecuador plays a pivotal role in the structure of regional integration and Latin America and South America.
Yes, that's correct. We're going to take a short break. I think it became very clear that the root of this problem is the neoliberal system. We'll be back in a few seconds. We'll be right back.
Estamos de regreso en el segundo bloque aquí en Negro y Blanco con
We're back with Irene Leon from Ecuador in Black and White. Irene, so far we feel that the actions taken by the young Noboa government are a clear abuse of the true crime situation.
Del joven Noboa, ya, que hay un aprovechamiento.
You have explained this situation very well, how this situation is connected with large economic groups. Let's be frank that the goal of Noboa is to drag the country into the mouth of American imperialism, that is, to bring the American military and announcing it.
Porque la llegada de las tropas norteamericanas o los anuncios de las mismas.
How should be described the presence of Laura Richardson? What do these agreements mean? 124 projects are planned for this year, and it's supposed to last for 5 years.
24 actividades ya planificadas y van a estar 5 años. ¿No? ¿Cómo se fortalece la presencia militar, policial?
How will these actions strengthen the U.S. military and police presence? In addition to the Manta Base issue and the Galapagos becoming some kind of natural aircraft carrier, it seems they're taking advantage of this economic crisis, a crisis of crime, economics, privatization, increased VAT, etc. What else is in this?
Delictual, económica, privatizaciones, subida del IVA, etc. ¿No hay algo más en esto?
I think you touched on one of the central issues that is happening in Ecuador. We're not alone in our own country, and part of what is happening is due to differences regarding the country's model and orientation at the domestic level, which is related to the international geopolitical environment. But the United States is a very important player that has a geostrategic agenda for the region as well, for Latin America. In this framework, Ecuador has its own interest due to its geopolitical position and being located in the middle of the globe and benefiting from preferred ports in the Pacific Ocean due to several factors. And in addition, it is considered a key country for the new geostrategic arrangement and the hemisphere proposed by the United States. Therefore, the changes that have been taking place in Ecuador since 6 years ago, as I mentioned earlier, have a close relationship with the alignment of foreign policy with U.S. strategy and geostrategy. There are several examples in recent years. For example, the U.S. Senate approved the law related to the government of Ecuador, which is called the Cooperation Act between the United States and Ecuador, a law to rule another country. The United States passed a law for Ecuador that covers all areas of life in our country, not only international relations, but also geopolitical order, security, defense, political management, and others. This is an important precedent. This law was passed in December 2022. Then during this process, we saw a diplomatic, or as you said, a military offensive, Southern Command. And what happened a few days ago in Ecuador are examples of this. Therefore, here we see the deployment of military force, which is against the Constitution, because the Constitution has introduced Ecuador as a country of peace without the presence of military bases and military aggression, especially foreign bases. Even in national definitions, the culture of peace is emphasized. Now, in such a country, a very detailed military cooperation agreement is signed. With the military agreement between the United States and Ecuador in October, there is no more talk of 1, 2, or 3 military bases. It's about handing the country over to intelligence operations and diplomatic exercises. In this agreement, it's guaranteed that all operations, personnel, intelligence services, etc., will have diplomatic immunity and will be subject to American laws, despite the fact that they're in Ecuador. It is difficult for me to explain this issue because it is both in the approved law, which we mention as an unprecedented case, that a law is approved in the United States to govern Ecuador, and in the military agreements, because this is not the first agreement. It is said that they're conducting an experiment of a new type of American protectorate, which bypasses the country's laws, constitution, and international agreement in this model in order to direct the country to another destination and another role, which is within the framework of foreign geostrategic design. So that's the path that Ecuador is on. And without a doubt, our recent experience as a country has been a lifetime of chaos. We have the numerous moments of unprecedented, unexpected, and even most unjustified chaos, followed by offers of security. In other words, leaving national sovereignty and becoming a client of private commercial packages of security models like what we currently have in Ecuador. Therefore, what we are witnessing is clearly our concern, because our country, which is defined on the basis of sovereignty, is becoming a protectorate. This is worrying. Another worrying issue is that the country has gone as far as declaring a civil war. That is what the president of Ecuador has announced. He has the military support of the Southern Command, the regime of Israel, and the government of Ukraine. He received a military plane from this country, which is an American aid received this week. This is an international invasion against a Latin American country that includes a declaration by CELAC, Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, which declares the region a land of peace. They brought the country into an unexpected military situation. In fact, numerous riot and violence tactics have been implemented in Ecuador with the aim of offering settlement packages to it.
Aplicaciones de tácticas de violencia y de caos para luego ofrecer también paquetes de solución.
Así es, para ir acercándonos ya al final.
Yes, that's right. What has been the reaction of the Ecuadorian people, the people who have established various movements?
¿Qué pasa con la CONAIE, es decir, con las organizaciones indígenas?
Where is the Confederation of Indigenous Nationalities of Ecuador? What about the Federation of Secondary Students of Ecuador? What about the Federation of Students, Trade Unions, National Union of Teachers? I mean, we have witnessed large demonstrations since the past.
Ha visto grandes movilizaciones, ¿no? ¿Y qué pasa con las fuerzas democráticas?
What happened to the democratic forces or patriotic forces? In such a difficult situation for Ecuador, what are the conditions of these groups?
Eso puede ser.
This could be a bad example, as you explained, and the path that they set for all of Latin America.
América Latina, como tú lo has explicado.
Así es. Mira, creo que estas tácticas de sembrar el caos.
Yes, that's right. I believe that these techniques of developing chaos and intimidation of people, especially in the case of Ecuador, which until recently was known as the axis of peace in the region, will lead people to an unexpected reaction. For example, the fear that is instilled through really effective media work against these threats has an impact on ordinary people and on the economy and on all aspects of life. And without a doubt, it cannot be denied that the people of Ecuador are intimidated. For example, since the declaration of civil war under the heading of terrorism, which targets the smallest common criminal and the biggest leader of drug trafficking, there's been confusion in the country, and people want these issues to be resolved so that they can act more freely. When the country stopped due to the declaration of this war, we're facing unusual conditions in all fields, and it is clear that society has many questions. Not only experts, but also common sense says that for the problems that exist in Ecuador, maybe it was possible to solve them with techniques focused on the same issues. Issues such as violent and dangerous acts. It would have been better if we had not declared war across the border and asked for help from the Southern Command and other actors, such as the extreme right-wing government of Argentina, to solve the country's problem. With these talks, the popular and social movement, which is very diverse in our country, was worried and expressed dissatisfaction with the current situation and asked for an explanation. The network of intellectuals defending humanity, the Confederation of Indigenous Nationalities of Ecuador, and other institutions have expressed concerns about these conditions, especially because of these declared war conditions. Democratic capabilities are limited.
Se obstruyen las capacidades democráticas.
El tiempo es cruel.
Time is cruel. For this reason, we say goodbye to Irene Leon, who has an excellent and very powerful presence. Thank you, Irene Leon. This is Black and White.
Esto es negro y blanco.
I should always thank the Black and White program. Thank you. See you soon.
Hasta pronto.
Hasta pronto.
See you soon.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of عمل انسان بعد از ایمان.
Self purification is the most significant factor.
امامت یک اصل زنده است در تاریخ اسلام.
امامت is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
Ramadanul Mustabin جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين
بی جهت نیست که امیرالمومنین وقتی آخرین اذان عمرش رو گفت شب 19 ماه مبارک رمضان.
In the last midnight time of the life of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we see that he, at the time of morning adhan or call to prayer, raised his head to the sky and talked to the horizon that this would be the last meeting between me and you. Imam Ali alayhi salam was always awake before the sunrise, and he used to wake up earlier even than the sun. Keeping vigil during the night and worshipping Allah was the habit of Imam Ali alayhi salam during all of his lifespan.
Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadan.
این رو ما اگر بیایم تمرین بکنیم از این سحر که گنجی داره.
During the month of Ramadan, we must benefit from praying and worshipping during dawn or midnight. Keeping vigil during Ramadan must be changed into a habit for our other days of the year. As Imam al-Askari alayhi salam stated, reaching Allah is like a long journey, and no one is able to finish this path unless he uses the time of night and dawn. We must make a serious decision during the month of Ramadan to change some of our bad habits to good ones. For this purpose, we can benefit from midnight prayer very much during the holy month of Ramadan. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
يا شهر الصائمين وروحا للمعاني تقيم الوحي فينا
حبيب التائبين يا شهر الصائمين وروحا للمعاني تقيم الوحي فينا
محارب اتصال برب العالمين وروضات سناها تقيم الوحي
علينا محاريب اتصال برب العالمين وروضات سناها تقيم الوحي فينا بشهر فاض نورا وقرآنا مبينا.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
In Britain, Chancellor of the Exchequer Jeremy Hunt has made no mention of the fact that the government's flagship plan to send refugees to Rwanda will cost the British taxpayer overall more than £500 million. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has suffered his heaviest defeat in the House of Lords after the Archbishop of Canterbury and former Conservative ministers joined forces with the opposition to force through 5 amendments to the Rwanda deportation bill. The string of government setbacks, most passed by unusually large margins of about 100 votes, means the legislation which aims to clear the way to send asylum seekers on a one-way flight to Kigali in Rwanda will have to go back to the House of Commons. The Prime Minister has previously warned the unelected chamber against frustrating the will of the people by hampering the passage of his Safety of Rwanda Asylum and Immigration Bill, which has been approved by MPs. Rishi Sunak has made stopping the boats a key pledge of his leadership. However, he has been hit by several setbacks, including the bill being challenged in the courts of law. Recently, official auditors said it will cost £1.8 million to send each of 300 migrants to Rwanda. The draft legislation and a treaty with Rwanda are intended to prevent further legal challenges to the stalled deportation scheme after the Supreme Court ruled the plan was unlawful, as well as compelling judges to regard the East African country as safe, it would give ministers the power to ignore emergency injunctions. It has been warned that the legislation is fundamentally incompatible with Britain's human rights obligations and would flout international law. But No. 10 Downing Street has said the government remains committed to sending flights to Rwanda in the spring. In all, peers backed 5 changes to the bill recently, including ensuring it complied with the rule of law and that Parliament cannot declare Rwanda to be safe until the treaty with its promised safeguards is fully implemented. The Lords also supported a move that would allow the presumption the country is a secure haven to be challenged in the courts of law.
I'm
Among those to vote against the government were the Archbishop of Canterbury, Reverend Justin Welby, and Conservative grandees Kenneth Clark, Lord Devon, and Viscount Hailsham, who have all previously held cabinet positions. The size of the defeats raised the prospect of an extended tussle between the House of Commons and the House of Lords during ping-pong, in which legislation is battled between the two houses until agreement is reached. The barrister and independent crossbencher David Anderson said the provision in the bill requiring Rwanda to be treated as safe takes us for fools. Proposing an amendment that would allow the presumption to be challenged in the courts of law, Lord Anderson added, "If Rwanda is safe as the government would have us declare, it is nothing to fear from such scrutiny." The Archbishop of Canterbury, Reverend Justin Welby, said international human rights law had developed following the horrors committed by Nazi Germany to act as a fallback and stop on governments. The Archbishop said, "We are not in any situation remotely like that, let's be clear," adding, "The government is not doing something on the scale of what we saw at that stage, but the government is challenging the right of international law to constrain our actions." Lord Kenneth Clark, the former Chancellor, said he hoped there would be a legal challenge to the bill if it was passed. He said, "I cannot recall a precedent in my time where a government of any complexion have produced a bill which asserts a matter of fact, facts to be fact." Later, responding to concerns about the mental health support asylum seekers would receive in Rwanda, the Home Office Minister Andrew Sharp said, "It would be far in the best interest, mental health interest of those seeking asylum and who are victims to seek asylum in the first safe country they come to. The government recently faces the threat of further defeats when the bill is again before the House of Lords. Britain and France are planning to establish a new customs partnership designed to disrupt the supply chain of small boats in the Channel. Recently, James Cleverly, the Home Secretary, hosted a meeting in Brussels, Belgium, of the Calais Group of Northern European countries. They plan to disrupt the supply chain of boats, parts, including engines and building materials. Website Reddit has also covered the same story. Not surprisingly, in his budget, Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, made no mention of the fact that the government's flagship plan to send refugees to Rwanda will cost British taxpayers overall more than £500 million. As the National Audit Office has revealed, for each of the first 300 people that will be flown to Kigali, Rwanda, it will cost a staggering £1.8 million. It is hard to believe that it was almost 2 years ago, in a speech in the Rwandan capital, that Priti Patel, the then Home Secretary, presented the UK-Rwanda deal to the world as a so-called groundbreaking agreement. Yet the government is still trying to get more laws through Parliament to make it happen. Having already passed the Illegal Migration Act, which, as was made clear by the UNHCR, amounts to an asylum ban, the Safety of Rwanda Asylum and Immigration Bill is now reaching its final stages, with the House of Lords voting to radically amend it recently. Prominent peers, including those on the government benches, expressed deep dismay that the bill rides roughshod over the rule of law by overturning the Supreme Court judgment that Rwanda is not a safe country to which to send people seeking asylum. Lord Tugendhat, the Conservative peer, whose nephew, Tom Tugendhat, is a Home Office Minister, lambasted the government for behaving like the ruling party in George Orwell's 1984. The barrister and independent crossbencher, Lord Anderson, pointedly said the legislation takes us for fools. In all, peers have made 10 changes to the bill, including ensuring it complies with the rule of law and that Parliament cannot declare Rwanda to be safe until the treaty that governs removals to the East African country, which includes safeguards, is fully implemented. The laws also made important amendments to ensure far greater protections for victims of modern slavery and human trafficking, and for children whose age is disputed. The bill will return to the House of Commons in less than 2 weeks, and the government will certainly reject all the law's amendments. The word in Westminster is that the only very modest concession No. 10 Downing Street is prepared to offer is to put in place an independent monitoring mechanism. This would replace the current arrangements for a monitoring committee that has already been appointed by the UK and Rwandan governments and includes those supportive of the policy, such as Alexander Downer, a former Australian politician who has been a vocal advocate for the new legislation.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. This is Muhammad Jawad, the host of the program Islamic Laws, with our guest speaker, Sheikh Javid, as always. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. My pleasure.
We are going to talk about, some of the jurisprudential laws which are related to this great month, the month of God, Ramadan, and Ramadan Mubarak to everyone, wherever you are, if you experience it this day or the other, or you have started your Ramadan previously, it doesn't matter. Just try to remember us and keep us in your du'as in this blessed month. Let me start off this episode actually with this question. Why Muslims in general, and why do Muslims in general and Shia Muslims in particular have a problem or even the difference of opinion when it comes to establishing the beginning of a lunar month? And normally it dawns on everyone, if they are not, in light, when it comes to Ramadan, it becomes so abundantly clear to everyone that there is this difference of opinion, right?
You're right. Well, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, the difference which occurs in regards to the beginning of a lunar month is something natural, mm-hmm. and there's nothing you can do about it, because different scholars have their own instruments of driving Islamic laws and their own principles based on which they deduct and infer legal rulings from the religious sources. So they have different understanding. And of course, this should not be a cause of concern. Mm-hmm. Everybody should act according to the verdicts and fatwa of his own mujtahid, mm-hmm. Who's supposedly the most qualified mujtahid.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter whether you are, for example, following Grand Ayatollah Khamenei or maybe Grand Ayatollah Sistani, as long as you're acting according to the fatwa of your marja, I think there'll be no problem.
Right.
You have to stick to the actually the mu'minin, the believers, should stick to the fatwa of their believers, of their mujtahid, and inshallah, there will be no problem. Of course, if there is any problem with regards to the beginning or the end of the lunar month, so again, the problem can be solved, and it's not no big deal as long as you understand that every scholar, every mujtahid has his own opinion and his principles based on which he infer the legal rulings.
Could any technology be into consideration when it comes to sighting of the moon, or, for example, for the end of the previous month and the beginning of the new month?
Well, that's where the shoe pinches, in fact, because, some scholars are of the view that in the early period of Islam, okay, there was no such device, no technology, no telescope or something to be used to ascertain the beginning of every month. So that's why they still hold that there should no such instrument must be involved, and that every individual must establish the beginning of the month through their own naked eyes.
Right.
On the contrary, some other scholars, including His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, is of the view that if you use any device such as a telescope, binoculars, or anything like that, which could ascertain the beginning of a lunar month, there is no problem. Even if you fly, using a helicopter and go over the clouds to find the moon or to establish the moon, and then come back and make an announcement declaring the beginning or the end of the month, there is no problem. As we can see in Iran, for example, a lot of people are commissioned to go out and they take their instruments with them, and they use even helicopters to go up and see the moon without any cloud preventing visibility.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javed. Let's take a short break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio. Just stay with us.
Ya Allah, thank you for another chance standing at my door. Ya Allah, you give me hope, deliver this gift right to my home. مرحب مرحب يا رمضان أحيي قلوبنا بالقرآن حل ليالنا بالقيام أهلا أهلا بالصيام.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to the great month of God, the month of Ramadan, with Sheikh Javed. Sheikh Javed, when it is not clear, or when we are not sure whether this is the last day of Sha'ban, which is the preceding month, to the next month, the month of Ramadan, or if it is the first day of Ramadan, what should we do? Can we fast that day, that Yom Ushak, basically?
That's a pretty good question, since we do understand that that a lot of people who do not have access to their mujtahid or to the offices of their mujtahid, since they are living in other countries, or maybe even in a far-flung area, having no connection, no telephone number, or nothing, so they doubt whether it is the end of the Sha'ban or the beginning of the month of Ramadan. In such cases, of course, it is necessary to In fact, one cannot observe fast with the intention of observing the fast of Ramadan, because as long as you are not sure that the month of Ramadan has started, you cannot make niyyah of fasting or observing the fast of Ramadan. You can fast, but it could be the fast, a qada fast, or it could be a kind of fast on behalf of someone else. Maybe you can make niyyah of fasting on behalf of someone else. So fasting is basically permissible, but not with the intention of observing the fast of Ramadan, because you're not sure that the month of Ramadan has set in. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, if later on you come to know that it was actually the first of Ramadan, then it will count as the first day of Ramadan, and there's no objection.
So should we leave the niyyah, the intention, open to God to be read? Like, if it is the last day of Sha'ban, then it would be considered as a kind of recommended fast, right?
Yes.
If it is the first day of Ramadan, then it would be considered as a compulsory, actually, fasting, right?
Yeah, you cannot be, decisively or make a niyyah that it is the first of Ramadan. Probably there is a chance of that day being the first of Ramadan, but you cannot. And the thing is that everything has to do with your niyyah, with the back of your mind,
right,
what you are actually intending when you are fasting. So if you intend to fast only, it's just a fast, and not the fast of the month of the first day of Ramadan, then that's okay.
Shastovit, you mentioned here in your answer that, you know, Muslims live everywhere.
Yeah.
Different corners of the world, right?
Yes.
So if they don't have access to the local religious scholars, can they base their horizon, wherever they are, on the horizon of the Muslim nations, like, for example, in the Middle East, and listen to the their religious authority or marja regarding, for example, whether it is the first day of Ramadan or the last day of Sha'ban?
Again, it's a very difficult question, very challenging, because they may not have the same horizon, okay? And someone who lives in, for example, in Australia, may not have the same, he may not have the same horizon as we do here in the Middle East. Or those people living in America or in the United States.
Exactly.
They
Europe is very close to the Middle East.
Yeah, Europe is very close.
But Australia and America, Latin America, they are very far away.
So that's why we see that the scholars differ in their opinion.
Exactly.
When it comes to the beginning of the month. Even some religious scholars, for example, a few years ago, let's say, one of the religious scholars who's very well known across the Middle East said that, okay, for example, today is the first day of Ramadan for the people in the Middle East, but it's not the first day of the Ramadan for the people in, let's say, South Africa or maybe North America. So because they think that maybe they have their own instruments through which actually they establish the beginning of the month of Ramadan, and we do not have anything to say with regards to the instruments or maybe the principle, the procedures they follow to ascertain the beginning.
Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't
let me go astray, 'cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. Ansha Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to the month of Ramadan. Sheikh Javid, we all know that niyyah or intention is, if not the most important, but at least we could say that it is one of the most important elements of every act, especially when it comes to worshiping God, right? Not only in prayer, but also in fasting or in some other religious rituals and acts. So if a person is undecided, not sure whether they should fast or not, what should they do? If they fast, would their fast be valid?
Just as there is a hadith which clearly denotes that innama al-a'malu bin-niyyat, so every act of worship depends squarely on the niyyat that you have. Okay, if you do are undecided, it means you have no niyyah. You are doing an act, or you are not doing an act. So you are undecided, so you have no intention. So if somebody is undecided in his niyyah, whether to break a fast or not to fast, or fast actually,
yes,
like the fast of Ramadan, or maybe he decides to do so, immediately, maybe after he remains undecided, his fast becomes invalid. Because when you begin to hesitate or decide not to fast, and then again you change your mind to fast, that means your fast has become void and you can never remain undecided. That's why it's very much important that you, as a believer, a practicing person,
yes,
must begin and form your niyat before the dawn, before actually the fajr time.
Yes.
And that's the beginning of the time when you are supposed to form your intention.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. And thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad. We bid you farewell and keep us in your duas. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Oh Allah, please unite us and guide us to paradise. Oh, and guide us to paradise. Ramadan.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to RIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
speaks with me, the saint of the soil. From the blood and the ashes, it speaks with me, the sound of the rain. From the battle and the victory.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.